Welcome to Leadership Reimagined, Episode 5, dealing with COVID-19 and the impact on your workforce with Lisa Dinhofer, founder and president of Coden LLC. During each episode, we look at leadership from the vantage point of what it's going to take for leaders to lead their organizations forward into a new future. I'm Dr. Jane Lovis, your host. Okay. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Jane.
So I know you've been dealing with clients that you've been having conversations with clients that are really dealing with all the trauma for their employees. So what kinds of trauma are some employees dealing with around COVID and job loss and working from home and just all of these areas?
Well, I think it's important to understand that really on a global level, we're going through collective trauma and grief, and we have been for the last several months. So that has nothing to do with what industry you're in, what your job title is. And if you can hear that, there's thundering going on right over my head. So sorry if you hear that. There's no one playing drums in my office here. So we're going through collective trauma and grief globally. And it's important to understand that we're not all going through that in the same way. When COVID began, there's a lot of conversation around we're all in the same boat, and well, not really. Well, this is hitting the world simultaneously. We're not all going through it in the same way. We're not all being impacted in the same way. Some people are going through this situation in a very well-appointed yacht, in rather comfortable circumstances. And other people are going through it in a rickety rowboat that's springing leaks all over the place. Mm-hmm. So it's important to understand that your personal experience is not the same as everyone else's. And it would be dangerous and a mistake to assume that it is. We also have to acknowledge that in recent weeks with George Floyd's murder and the two that came just before Mr. Floyd, that's been like a second pandemic of anxiety, upheaval, stress, absolutely trauma. So we're no longer just dealing with COVID, and it's, you know, amazing that we're just saying just now about a pandemic. But we are dealing with two huge circumstances of disruption.
Yeah. And when you talk about trauma, because I imagine a lot of people think of trauma as still being something physical. Like getting hit over the head, you experience physical trauma. And that's not what you're talking about.
No, there are definitely physical consequences to what we're all experiencing. There's a lot of somatic symptoms that people are having, but trauma is a brain thing. Trauma is when your central nervous system has been dysregulated and your brain perceives a threat. So your brain, being the wonderful mechanism that it is, it's hardwired for this. However, it's hardwired to handle a stressor for about 20 to 30 minutes, not day after day after day after as a lifestyle. And it's why the issue of chronic stress really is a tremendous health issue. It's a mental health care issue as well as a physical health issue, because chronic stress can have devastating long-term outcomes as well as very serious short-term outcomes. So when the brain perceives a threat, that part of your brain that's associated with survival lights up and everything else goes dark, because right now your brain is in survival mode. So it puts the rest of your body in survival mode. So it starts spitting out stress hormones that help you meet the challenge of whatever is coming at you at the moment from both a physical and neurological capability. And we all experience in our lifetime a traumatic event to some degree. It's not rare, but whether or not it turns into PTSD, that's something else. And what we're all experiencing now, the complete disruption of life as we know it, is very traumatic.
And how are some people experiencing that? So if they, you know, what are some of it's, I don't want people to self-diagnose, but I want them to be aware of, oh, if I'm normally a great sleeper and I sleep all night, and now I have such a hard time getting to sleep, my mind won't shut down. Are these symptoms or are these just kind of the way things are?
No, these are symptoms of chronic stress and disruption. I'll give you some characteristics of chronic stress and disruption. So when our brain is experiencing unrelenting stress, there are little filaments in our brain called dendrites that connect everything in our brain. And when we are stressed for too long, those dendrites become fragile and they snap. And we know that's happening when we start having issues like word retrieval problems. We can't put two words together to create a sentence. Brain fog, somebody asks us, question and we just, you know, can't come up with an answer. We can't think of the word that we're looking for. We can't concentrate. We cannot retain information. You're reading the same page in the book five times. That does not necessarily mean you're going into dementia. What it more likely means is that you've been under chronic stress and your brain is telling you, I need a break, right? Mm-hmm. So those are very common responses. Fatigue, unbelievable fatigue. Even though you've been sitting at your computer all day, not necessarily doing anything physically, and you just feel worn out. You can't think anymore. You can't do anything anymore. Fatigue, right? That's part of what we're dealing with. Cognitive organizational tasks, separating things out, going through the mail and creating piles and, you know, keeping your appointments straight and showing up on time, you know, having difficulty, you know, doing that. Staying on track. Even apathy, you stop caring. It takes a lot more energy to get your enthusiasm up. And in particular, low tolerance for frustration. Even stupid little frustrations, dropping something on the floor or bumping into something or larger frustrations, but low tolerance for frustration. Those are some key responses. Mm-hmm. And we can have acute stress responses after a singular event, and then we can have also long-term chronic responses that also include weight gain, changes in digestion, changes in sleep patterns, eating patterns, changes that affect our relationships. It's pretty serious stuff.
Yeah, sounds like it. So what, you know, with this, with all of this, what is there that leaders can do, that CEOs, how can they support their employees?
So the first and most important way for them to support their employees is to start supporting themselves. They have to start with themselves. When I work with, leadership in a company where there's been a disruptive event, and that could be an active shooter, it could be scandal, it could be bullying and sexual harassment, it could be the death of an employee or employee violence, you know, something that really disrupts the norm and really causes upheaval. First thing leaders have to do is to recognize the impact on themselves and not pretend that it hasn't. They have to acknowledge to themselves and understand and look within, how has this impacted me? What, you know, what's going on with me? And take measures to address that, whatever that might mean. And from that, you address your workforce from a place of humility and vulnerability. Some of the worst advice C-suite leaders could ever get in a very disruptive event is, you know, don't let people know you've been impacted. Don't let people know you're getting help. That's the worst advice they could ever hear. They should run, not walk, run from that. Because a leader looking at his or her workforce and saying, you know what, this has impacted me, and then talking about how it's impacted, tell a story. Tell your people a story about yourself. It humanizes you. It brings you closer to your people. They'll maybe see themselves in you. And you tell this story about how this is impacting you and what you're doing to address it, because that also gives permission for other people to say, you know what, it's impacting me too, and I was afraid to say that. And if he or she is getting help, I can get help for myself as well. Right? So coming from a place of vulnerability and humility is number one. And number two, acknowledging that you don't have all the answers. You know, you don't come equipped with a crystal ball. You know, most C-suite folks are not born with clairvoyance. And admitting that you don't have all the answers is also humanizing yourself and standing in front of your people and being very real and honest, right? The reason why they will continue to follow you, however, is not because you have all the answers, because they don't believe you have all the answers either. It's because you have demonstrated and inspired a confidence in them to follow you through a place of uncertainty, that they feel you have the heart and the strength to move the organization through a place of uncertainty, and that you're bringing everyone with you because you're going to tap into the collective intelligence within the company. You're not going to decide that you have to figure it all out on your own. You're going to engage your people in coming up with whatever answers or problem-solving solutions you need to drive the company forward together, collectively. You recognize all of the talents and skills within your workforce, and you are engaging them. You're tapping into that, and you're going to do this as a collective organization, not just a singular person trying to drive through the fog.
That is such great advice, because the reality is, employees know that their leadership doesn't have every single answer.
Of course they do. Of course they know that.
And so when we as leaders pretend that we have all the answers, we've already put a wall up.
Well, I call it going through the world through your representative.
Yeah.
Right? It's your representative. It's this image. And in times of fear, in times of doubt, in times of uncertainty, in times of upheaval, people want the real deal. They need the real deal, because that's the only thing they'll trust, is the real deal. So if you continue through your representative, right, you're not presenting an individual that they can trust, and trust leads to confidence in following you. A leader is someone that inspires people to follow them voluntarily, not because they have to, but people follow you voluntarily because you have inspired confidence in them. And that doesn't mean you're not scared. In fact, when, you know, I've talked to to leaders who've gone through active shooting situations. And those that kept their key talent and kept that organization together were those that got real, real fast with their people and demonstrated humility in how this impacted them and how they're dealing it with them and their interest in knowing how it's impacting their workforce, and that we need to move through this together, right? Courage is not about not being afraid. Courage is about being afraid, but you move forward anyway.
Right.
And in circumstances of great upheaval, the first thing that comes up is uncertainty, right? And it's a reminder that certainty is an illusion.
Right.
We don't have certainty any day of the week. We just think that we do. It's what's known as an assumptive world, that we create an illusion of how much control we think we have, or, you know, how we think life is supposed to work out. And when a disruption comes into our lives, be it personal, be it professional, that assumptive world cracks. And it's a humbling experience to realize we did not have the kind of control we thought we did. And it can also be frightening because you realize, oh, so this could happen again.
Yeah.
Right? But in that humbling is a honing. It's a polishing. It teaches us things that maybe we weren't willing to see before, or we could not understand before, because we were in a place of what we thought was certainty and we didn't need to look at that. Mm-hmm. And so when we have things like social unrest that we're dealing with now, where systems that it's just been this way forever, it's all I've ever known in a lifetime, and those systems are not only being questioned, but they're being turned upside down, right? And the assumption that our country is so prepared that it can handle everything and anything, well, we've seen that's not the case, right? It causes us to rest in what I call the gap, rest in the pause. You know, we identify a problem and then we're very anxious to identify the solution and get to that, but there's gold in the gap. There's that space between deciding on a solution to address a problem. There's a lot of potential in that gap, but too often we're in such a hurry to do something that we miss all that's in that gap. And that's where your workforce, their power, their potential, their talent, their skills, to go into that gap and ask and engage your workforce in, what do we do about this? And how should we address that? And tell me your ideas about this. Tremendous stuff can come from your willingness to be patient and pause in the gap. And I don't mean that if it's life and death and you've got to make a decision right now that you do nothing. That's not what I'm saying. But more often than not, there is time and space to rest in that gap. It's our own impatience and our own fear to do something that pushes us to implement a solution that maybe just doesn't hit the mark, but we just felt we had to do something right now.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing you say is that leaders, it's important for leaders to look at how this is impacting them and get real with themselves. Share that, get feedback, and then create a space to have conversations.
So the space is about, okay, so this is what's happened with our company. You know, talking about what's happened with yourself is important because it's humanizing, but also talking about what this event, whatever it is, what this has done to our organization, where we are now as an organization, and being very clear being very honest and direct about that, right? This is what we're looking at. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is how much time we have to be in this current situation before we're going to have to make decisions based on external forces on us that we don't have control over. You know, talking about what's going on in the organization and then saying, I need you. I need your talent. I need your ideas. And organizing conversations. And this is where midline management comes in. You know, senior leadership, having town halls with the whole organization so that people can ask the people at the top anything that they need to ask, and getting that information straight from the horse's mouth, right? And then organizing the organization to come up with the answers that are not necessarily visible right now. And those midline managers are the ones to help organize the sponsoring of those conversations and the coming up of ideas. And the thing is, those midline managers need to create a very safe environment for people to do that. Otherwise, they won't speak up.
Right.
Right. And that tenet of safety has to come from the top. Mm-hmm. And that no idea is too crazy. No idea is too outlandish. Because every idea can lead to a what if. Every idea is just an opening salvo that can be worked with and manipulated and built upon and modulated to come up with something you never even thought of before whilst you're in that gap of trying to figure out. And here's the thing, you know, Kip Tindall, the former CEO of the Container Store back in 2008, the company was like teetering on the cliff, right? And, you know, he talks about the gap and he gave marching orders to his midline management. We need to talk to our people on the ground because they have information we don't have. They're closest to our customers. He explained where the company was. He explained all of the information around that. And asked his people, give me X number of ideas. And everybody did that. And what he found is that people on the ground were willing to deal with more burden than what the senior leadership team was going to place on them because they had been engaged and they were willing to accept that to save the company. Mm-hmm. And everybody worked together for that higher purpose of saving the company. And they were willing to endure that sacrifice because it came from them and they were doing it together and everybody was sharing the sacrifice and the burden equally, whether, you know, in senior leadership team down to the ground. And they didn't have to lay people off and the company, you know, revived and thrived because Mr. Tindall understood the power of engaging his whole workforce from a place of humility and vulnerability.
That is so important. And I think that's a really critical piece right now for leadership to take is.
And it's not something that in our culture that resonates with typical definitions of leadership. We have a very skewed understanding of the words vulnerability and humility as if leadership is always about charging forward, being very aggressive, knowing everything, always being sure, never having a wobble, and being very closed, you know, never talking about themselves, never talking about being impacted, and always just very focused on, you know, market growth and revenue growth, right? And I do believe that the pandemic has helped a lot of people, not just in leadership, but all kinds of people understand that the way we do business in this country needed to change. Mm-hmm. Right? It needed to change because, and this is something I talk to organizations that I work with. You can have goals, but goals are not your values. And when you are in a place of crisis, regardless of the cause of that crisis, That's when you need to tap into your values and your higher purpose, because those things are impervious to external circumstances. And I do exercises and work with leadership on what are your values. And you'd be surprised the difficulty they have in answering that question and the confusion people have between a standard or a method and a real value. And also the notion of an organization having a higher purpose, you know, market share and revenue generation, those are goals, but what's the higher purpose of your organization? Why are you here?
Yeah.
What do you bring to the table? What value do you add to people's lives? You know, in times of crisis, you make value and purpose-driven decisions because those things are impervious to whatever external circumstances are causing the disruption. When you stay true to yourself, when you stay true to the personal and the organizational values and the higher purpose of that, it allows your workforce to grab onto and anchor themselves to something larger than themselves that they believe in, that shouts louder, if you will, than fear or uncertainty, and is a guiding light through uncertainty with something that they do know, they are certain of, values and purpose, you're certain of. And when you have that, that's a very firm foundation in order to move yourself and your organization and your workforce forward. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting how often people and people in leadership positions, they have very lofty language on their websites about what the mission, vision, values of the organization is, but walking that talk doesn't happen nearly as often. And now COVID is really shining a light on that, and people are being called to answer to that.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, that was great. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me, Jane.
So share with folks a little bit about yourself, what you do, and how they can get hold of you.
Well, thank you for asking that. My background academically, I'm a thanatologist. A thanatologist is someone that specializes in death and loss and grief, but also non-death losses. And I have a subspecialty in trauma. So I work with people in the middle of crisis as well as in the aftermath. And I'm also a specialist in difficult conversations, really difficult conversations, like having to deliver a death notification or terminate an employee without them wanting to come back and harm you, giving bad news to clients. And there's lots of different kinds of bad conversations that we have to have in the workplace. But very simply, I mentor companies through traumatic or disruptive events. I, you know, mentor them through the crisis if they reach out to me whilst the crisis is still going on, like it is now with COVID, right? Mm-hmm. And through the aftermath, because as I always say, crisis is temporary, aftermath is permanent. Mm-hmm. And most risk management plans or business continuity plans focus on the physical, right? Getting the computers going, getting the workspace going, but they don't plan for the people issues. And particularly like in a merger or reduction in force, leadership rarely makes plans for managing the people issues that will manifest and stay for a very long time. Yeah. Once the riff is over. For people who are left standing, it's like they've gone through a natural disaster. Mm-hmm. It's very traumatizing to have, you know, a large portion of your workplace relationships wiped out, and everything is different. There's a lot of survivor guilt.
Right.
Right. So I mentor companies through these very difficult upheavals and or disruptive events. And I work with, you know, people in C-suite all the way down to the ground level, in a lot of different formats, be it training, coaching, debriefing, all different formats based on what it is they need, what happened, what led up to this. All the work I do is customized, so there's no cookie cutter, you know, kind of shoehorning organizations into some standard procedure, because when it comes to upheaval, there's no standard procedure, right? It's right. Very individual. So people can reach out to me at my website, which I'm sure you'll show a link.
Yep.
And can call me and email me at the contact information you'll be showing, and I'd be very happy to talk with them. My process is that I have a consultation with people. It's free. And we talk about what's going on to see if I'm a good fit for you. And if I am, then we go into a kind of co-creation process. I don't just come up with the answers and give people proposals. I don't do proposals. I work with the client to work with me in co-creating an approach to whatever is going on. So that leader or whoever I'm working with in co-creating this solution, it's coming from a place of what's really happening with them at the time, and they're telling me what it is they need, and I giving them ways in which we can address that. So by the end of that co-creation discussion, it's simply a matter of dropping it down to hard copy and, you know, getting a signature. It's a very easy process. It's customized. It starts with assessment. I always start with assessment, and we move forward in that way. But I work very closely with organizations in how they're moving through this, the challenges that come up, because there's a lot of adaptive challenges that come up with an upheaval. So we work through all of that. So usually my engagements with companies, it's a relationship, right?
Yeah.
I form relationships and we work through that relationship.
Great. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. And congratulations on having this podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us this week on Leadership Reimagined. Make sure to visit our website, lovisconsulting.com, to access previous shows and learn more about